Fashion.
Turn to the left.
Fashion.
Turn to the right.
Fashion.
Fashion.
You're listening to Fashion on 95BFM with Penelope Noir.
Good morning, Penelope Noir.
Morning, how are you?
Yeah, good, good. Now, this morning, we're talking about Smith & Coe.
Yes, I thought I'd talk a little bit about the history of the store and the woman behind it, because it closed, well, the two top floors closed at the end of January, and there's now just one floor and online purchasing.
Mm-hmm. Bit of a scale and, back. Would you say it's Tamaki Makaurau's, like, one high-end fashion department store? Is it like the last remaining bastion of those?
Yeah, it's definitely the last one. I guess David Jones in Newmarket has kind of taken its place in that suburb, because, you know, we all know that there was another store in Broadway as well for Smith & Coe's, but it survived, you know, all the other outlets, which were like Milne and Choice, John Courts, George Courts, and Rendles. And I think you might remember, as I do, when we were kids, Rendles was around, but it was kind of lowbrow. But initially it started as almost like on par with Smith & Coe's.
Now, in recent years, would you say that the challenges that Smith & Coe has faced, obviously the advent of online shopping, but I guess the very centre of town is... I guess they've had to trade through COVID, but also there's been so much development in the city, as you know, as far as like revamping Queen Street and getting the rail network going. So they've, I guess, some of the access to the store has been hampered by that somewhat.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's quite interesting too, because the mayor wants to, you know, kind of considered changing the two top floors into apartments. Kind of feel like we've got enough apartments in the central city, and there's not enough stores really. So that's kind of, and it's interesting because Smith & Coe's actually survived two economic depressions in the 1880s, the 1930s, two world wars, the flu pandemic in 18, and very restrictive import licensing, which happened in 1938 to 1982. So they kind of, you know, they had an amazing business model, I guess, and the store has always been in the family. It's always been owned by the Smith & Coe family.
Yes, yes. Now, tell us a bit more about the people behind it. What have you got for us, Penny?
Yeah, sure. So it was established in 1880 by an Irish immigrant, Marion Smith, née Coe, and she set up a draper's and millinery shop, initially as Smith's Cheap Drapery Warehouse, and she kind of like was very frugal and wanted people to be able to afford fabric, because then you know, you didn't buy clothing off the rack. It was, you know, you'd kind of made it at home or you had seamstresses. But within the first year, because she'd moved to New Zealand in 1879, I believe, but her husband was in poor health, so they travelled to New Zealand because it was a better climate, and he initially worked in another drapery, but her store became so successful that her husband kind of came in, and then her brother also took over, and they became partners, but she couldn't become a partner because she was a woman, which is so crazy.
Wow.
And she's quite an interesting woman because she was a devout Methodist, and she contributed to the community both in Ireland before she came to New Zealand. But she was very, you know, devout with her missionary work and things like that. And she actually gave up her family home when her husband died. It was called The Grange in Herne Bay, and it became an orphanage for girls, and then later established the Wesley Home in Mount Albert as an orphanage for boys. She also gave two parks to the city, Quinton Park on the North Shore and Craig Avon in Green Bay, which I didn't know. I know that park. And she had no children but adopted a boy, and he participated in religious life. But when he wanted to become a doctor, she removed him from school, which I thought was quite interesting. Yeah, so she had established Smith & Coe's with her husband and brother, and the store really focused on the sale of fabric sourced from London, there's a buying office there, and they source textiles from all over Britain and Europe, like Liberty Fabrics, those sorts of things. And the demand for fabric in Auckland and New Zealand was really huge because there were so many people immigrating here, and there was no pre-made clothing, as I said earlier. So they had to hire seamstresses and tailors to make the clothing. So they had huge workrooms as well where these people worked, and you would go in, and if you came from the country, you'd go in and have your measurements taken, and they would keep them on file. And then you could, you know, contact them, and they would send out
a new set of clothes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Crazy, eh? And so ready to wear, kind of like there were some clothes, but they were, you know, varied sizes, weren't that many sizes, so they could alter those clothes as well. And according to the New Zealand Fashion Museum, you know, Smith & Co. is catered to everyone, and an ad in the Auckland Star in 1898 invited inspection of 100 exclusive dress lengths of new black fabrics. And that was because, you know, women always wore black to funerals, and widows observed a 2-year mourning period where they wore black. So there was an employee that would read the death notices, and then he would post out samples of black fabric to people, which I thought was pretty funny. And the dress department was renamed the Fabric Hall around that time. It was the biggest in Australasia. And that didn't close until 2004, which kind of shows you, you know, the length of time and the way that they were able to kind of adapt the business as they needed to. Yes, because they saw New Zealand through, like, afternoon dresses of the 1920s, you know, satin bias cut dresses, Dior's new look, which was licensed to LJ. And then they also survived, I mentioned earlier, import restrictions. So in 1938, the government put these restrictions on buyers and stores and things because they wanted to encourage New Zealand-made products, and that wasn't lifted until 1982. So Smith & Co. is predominantly sold local labels like Pepper Tree, Society, Miss Deb and Thornton Hall. Yeah, and so then parallel importing happened, and then, of course, the floodgates opened and you could get anything. Yeah, so I kind of feel like it's quite sad that Smith & Coe's have reduced their store size, but it's great that they're still continuing as well. Like, even if it's a smaller store, it's still there. And, you know, for me personally, it was I've got great memories of it because my great-grandmother, who I was lucky enough to know, used to take me to the tea rooms all the time on the bus. So I really love that store.
Have you been in? Have you been in since they've downsized to just the single floor?
No, I haven't yet. But I should check it out. They actually also were the first to have a beauty hall, which was set up in 1989. So you know how, like, when you walked in, the whole thing was open plan with the makeup? Like, no one else had ever kind of done that. It'd always been like a long kind of just one length of bench along the wall sort of thing.
And yeah. I guess what would you say Smith & Co's role is in today's fashion industry? Does it help shape trends, or is it serving more as like a luxury staple?
I think it's kind of you know, it's a luxury staple. I think what was quite cool about it is that you knew the brands that it carried, because it did carry things like Kate Sylvester, Karen Walker, Stolen Girlfriends, you know, all those sorts of things, but as well as very high-end international labels. So I think it was very good to be able to go and select whatever you wanted from any, I guess, country that you were into. It's kind of like the real style of what you were aiming to have for yourself, as opposed to technically just what the label is. And I think, you know, the Christmas window, I think, will be something that will be really missed, because I imagine they won't be able to do it to the same extent that they used to.
Yes. Yeah, definitely, you know, a Christmas destination, isn't it?
Yeah. And when you have kids, like, that was, or even adults, you know, I still loving going to see what was in the window there. It's so amazing.
Now, looking ahead, what do you see in the future for Smith & Coe?
I think that they'll still continue with the, you know, the one with the store on the one level. And I think, you know, people are still always going to be very reliant on that kind of tangible in-person shopping. You know, like, some people, you know, we all like doing online shopping, but sometimes you just want to go and window shop as such. And so you want to kind of just wander around and check things out.
Yes.
So I think there's always going to be a want for that.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Penelope Noir, thank you so much for fashion this morning. Great history on Smith & Co. is fascinating stuff. And is it also your birthday?
Yes, it
is. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the text of the text through. All right. Hey, Penny, we'll catch you this afternoon.
Yes.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
That was fashion on 95BFM with Penelope Noir.
We are the Goon Squad and we're coming to town. Beep, beep.
Beep, beep.